Hi there, my name is Hannah Sharmi. This is the What is Fromcast podcast on the Podcastica Network.
Welcome to the show. My name is Alex.
Got to move the cough drop so I can say it's Lizzie.
And we are talking What is From. We are talking episode 9, season 2, The Ball of Magic Fire. And today is Sunday, is From Day. And, you know, it was another boring episode, don't you think?
I fell asleep about 3 times.
I'm telling you, we had if you
oh
went
my
to sleep,
God.
If you went
sound
to sleep,
like the people in that Facebook page.
I know. If you went to sleep on this, first off, you don't want to go to sleep. Thanks to John, as Harold just posted on his Twitter. Thanks, John, for not letting anybody go to sleep. And secondly, we have so many questions, so many hopefully answers, and you know. It's just amazing what this show has done. But before we get all to that, I just want everybody, if you enjoy what we're doing, you know, hit that subscribe button so that we can get to our 500 or 1,000 subscribers before the end of the season. And I know we're kind of short, but you know what? Everyone helps. And you can hit the bell, which alerts you of every time we drop interviews and podcasts and all sorts of different things. And I just want to thank everybody that's really contributed, whether it's feedback or, you know, in the shop now and all that other kind of good stuff. But let's get to it. What were your first thoughts of this crazy episode?
I loved it. You know, I'm getting very anxious because we are coming to the end of this second season. And I really, really hate that. I hate it a lot. So I'm getting very anxious and scared, you know, and wondering what all these changes mean, because it seems like there's a lot of changes that I don't fully understand. And not necessarily seeing how they all met, you know, work together. What about you?
Well, you know what? I keep going back to the three words that we asked all the actors. And I keep going to what Donna/Liz said. She was like, there's hope, but there's not, but there is. And it was funny at the time, but I've kept that in the back of my mind. And I'm like, this is not good. We have got a lot of problems. And I don't even know where to start except for one place. And we talked about this before. We got a big bug problem, don't we?
Oh my God. You know what? They must be in freaking Atlanta because I hate bugs. I hate it. And I'm tired of dealing with it. I want to go back to Massachusetts or at least have the climate there that's here or here, here, whatever.
All I know is the only criticism that I have of this whole entire show.
Yeah.
There's one.
It's too short and it's going to end.
Actually, then I have two. Those cicadas, those CGI cicadas were awful. Other than that, I loved the whole thing, but it was just like, those things were just like, oh, they were like glowing and whatever, but it doesn't really matter. It was neat because in the beginning of the episode, we had that sound as the backdrop. It was we talk about music. That was the soundtrack of this episode.
Yeah, I hate that noise in the summer. It tells you that summer is here, you know, but it's so loud and I will never hear it the same way again, ever.
Oh, I just remember when I was a kid, you know, every 27 years you get the cicadas and all that other kind of stuff. We got them so bad in the Northeast, and it was so bad. And they, you know, they were exactly, Lisa saying it looked like they were crawling on the screen. And, you know, I don't know too many people that really like cicadas because they make that awful noise and they're big and they just want to, they're just awful.
The size of them. Like, I've had one fly into me. Like, one flew into me not too long ago. Must have been last summer. Just flew right into me. It was like being hit with a bird, you know?
Oh, like, absolutely. And
they're big. And there's a commercial, there's a bug commercial where they've got CGI bugs, and it's the same thing. It's like they're crawling on the screen. And I loved when the cicadas came into Marielle's room and they're coming up over.
Oh yeah. They were like almost like roaches. Oh, they were awful, but we're going to get to that. I want to, you know, we talked about, you know, that first scene, and there's some questions that I have that I wanted to ask you. And I also want to ask the people watching, you know, it starts, and I had to put my Yankee reference, Reggie. I know you hate it as a Boston fan, but whatever. So Reggie comes out, and did you notice what he was wearing?
Wasn't that Sarah's sweater?
It was actually Nathan's sweater.
Oh.
That was the sweater.
It was, it didn't fit him.
Well, that was the sweater that she wanted to get. Yeah. And he's running out and he's all bloody, and you can set the table. I mean, right from there. And he was the most annoying person. I'm going to put this out there. I hope he dies. I mean,
you know, the funny thing is we didn't even talk about him last episode. Like, I mean, that's a big deal. Some guy comes out of a house screaming and he's covered in blood and we didn't even mention it.
He's just annoying. I'm sorry. I know the listeners are probably saying, oh, you're making too much. He was just annoying. But he decides that, you know, what I find interesting is when they went upstairs, it was like the first episode of the series.
Yeah, it was similar because there's Paula laying on the bed. And I'm sorry, she was mean. So, no, I'm not sorry. She should be sorry because she was mean, you know? And with her gone, it was like he got louder or something. But the cicadas had come in. She was just taking a nap. And the cicadas had come in and basically crawled in her mouth. And I think they dug their way out.
Do you really think that's what happened?
That's what I think happened. While she was screaming. And I think that because of what we saw with Randall, then what we see with Marielle and Julie, even though we don't see the cicadas, they both have their mouths open screaming, and as did Randall. And as Randall's screaming, they're crawling into his mouth.
I'm gonna question you on that for one reason. If we go back to the melody,
yeah,
it talks about three. Now.
That's the thing, right? We don't know what our real count is.
But wait, you've got
Paula
Randall.
Is a definite dead.
Well, no, I'm saying, but you've got Randall, you've got Marielle, and you've got Julie.
Yeah.
That have gotten that. So if you let's just say put that to the side for 1 second, she is a fourth one.
She's either the fourth or the first. We don't know.
Or is Smiley? Well, no, Smiley didn't die that way.
He didn't die that way. So we can't count him. But let's talk about that in a bit. Like,
yeah, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So she's killed in her sleep, and she was reciting this poem, Bhakta said it was a nursery rhyme. I Googled. I didn't see anything. So I think they made it up. And I'm not 100% on that, but that's what I think. And supposedly she was reciting that poem. I don't know when she was doing it since she was screaming her head off. But I loved how everyone has it memorized after hearing it maybe once. But The poem is, they touch, they break, they steal.
Hold on 1 second. I can pump it up right here.
No one is free. Here they come. They come for three, unless you stop the melody. So they touch, they break, they steal. I'm not sure. I'm drawing a blank. I didn't think about this too heavily, but they touch, they break, they steal. I don't know if those are crimes that have been committed, and maybe a crime that a person has committed all three. And that's why they end up in the predicament they're in. No one here is free. We know that they're all trapped there. They can't leave. They're stuck. Here they come. And the thing that got me is that the Pixies are singing the Que Sera, Sera song. Right. Now, their big American hit was Here Comes Her Man. Yeah, I know it's not the same thing. Like, it's Here They Come, and the Pixies is Here Comes Her Man, you know? And one thing that they did in the video, because they made a music video, and more so due to the pressure of MTV and having to have a video, when the video starts, or the entire video, this is them through the whole video. That's all they do.
Open the mouth. They just have their mouth open for those of you listening.
Well, yeah, they just have their mouth open, and it's like, you know, that's just them singing. And when I saw them at the Paradise in Boston, I'm trying to remember what year it was, but it was in support of the Doolittle album, which that song comes from. I was like, are they going to sing the song, or are they going to stand there with their mouths open? They were so cool that they never played that song. And it was like, you know, is it because they were bucking the, you know, what was expected of them, or they were tired of the song, or what the deal was? I don't know. But it was a phenomenal concert, just the same. But the reason why I bring up the whole mouth thing is that what are these people doing while they're being swarmed?
Mouth is open.
Their mouths are open.
Right.
So they come for three. But we don't know what that means exactly.
True.
Like, what I mean, that people are in. They come for three. Do they take three souls? Do they take three lives? Do they take 3 minutes? Like, what's the three that they take? And then the thing that comes back that's familiar, unless you stop the melody, because if you remember, that's what Martin said to Boyd. You've got to get me out of here before the song starts.
Stop. Right. Bad shit's going to happen.
Yeah. You got to get me out of here before that music stops. And so that has been the thing. And so the cicadas can be heard, or cicadas. I don't know why I want to be, maybe I'm just feeling super Brahmin, Boston Brahmin, but the cicadas are being heard outside. Boyd sends Julie and Kenny to everyone, you know, in the town to say, don't fall asleep tonight. He doesn't really tell Julie why. Kenny kind of knows why. And then Boyd takes Reggie up to Colony House. And as we're doing that, like, it was really cool because we go from Sarah's old house up to Colony House, and we're following the flying cicadas. And I loved that. It was almost like the monkeys in The Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
I do want to pump this up for you just so you can answer this. Lizzie, you haven't connected the three that are coming to the three that were chained up. Martin and the two other corpses. Is it all connected?
It's all connected. She's not asking, but
it's all connected?
Yeah. Well, no, she's saying, Chrominacle is saying that it is.
I don't know. I don't know.
I know I made I made some notes about Martin and somewhere in here, but no, I mean, I don't remember seeing three. I definitely remember seeing another body chained up. So I'm at two, but the thing about it is two of those were like really dead.
Right.
Or at least the one we saw was really dead. And Martin was alive until he died at the end, or, you know, so,
but the way I think it's connected, that could be a different three. Meaning this is another three. Does that make sense? I understand Martin and the two corpses. Yes. Okay. That's fine. But my point being is that could have been a different time when the three were, when you were counting those three. So this is a whole new, like Victor said, leaves are changing. Things are changing. So maybe this is a new era in From.
I don't know. It could be a new era. It could be that those guys don't count at all.
I personally think,
I don't know,
in my heart of hearts, is that that three is different. When he gave Boyd the worms, mm-hmm, and he was basically saying, now it's your burden.
Yeah, he was saying that.
Krominuckle, I mean, I know, you know, it's a different time, but my point being is, yeah, that was three, and now we're dealing with the new three. My question is, and again, how does the killing of Reggie's Paula affect the other three that have cicadas? And that's the question that I want answered. But that said, I mean, we're not going to answer it right today. I mean, I'm not that good. I don't have the crystal ball just yet. But I love, after we do all that, everybody's split up. Julie's going up to tell her people, and then all of a sudden, we go to Randall, and Randall has this new plan.
And which I'm thinking he's leaving Donna out there to be the bait for the night. That's the only thing I can think of. And I really, really didn't like it at all. Like, I'm like, leave my Donna alone. You know, like, I don't know if Randall realizes what he's messing with, but Donna is like the favorite. You know, like, I turned my friend Desiree onto this, and she's like, I love Donna. I love Donna. And I'm like, yep.
Well,
Donna is a favorite. So he's got her tied up there. And, you know, Jim comes along and he's just like, what is going on? And Randall is like, he tells Donna, you're in on this.
Right.
And which now all of a sudden I'm like, well, maybe Randall's not a mole. Maybe he's not watching the downtown. But the thing that I noticed about Randall, and I started having a lot of thoughts about Randall, the thing that I noticed about Randall is that he'd become unraveled somewhat.
Yeah, no, I really think he wasn't the mole after watching this. Because, and maybe I'm swaying with the way they're writing it, but he really wants to find out what the hell's going on. Like,
he doesn't. It's like he doesn't want to play ball with anyone, even at the expense of his own demise, if it comes to that. Right. But yeah, the thing was, like, I started thinking about, where was Randall coming from? Right. Going back to what Jade said about, well, if you're on the bus, how good can you be doing? Right. And he and Bakta have a laugh over that. So we know that Marielle is going to a treatment center, right? So she gets on the bus to go to the treatment center. Elgin's going to his grandma's house. So we have Randall going somewhere.
He's going to his nephew's birthday party, remember?
No, I know, but he's coming from somewhere. But he may, you know, he might not even have been invited to that party. Yeah. And I'm thinking he's coming from some kind of jail where he was possibly getting psychiatric help as well.
First off, and I'm going to say this, and I'm only going to say it once to everybody, I never really thought there was a mole. And I'm not saying that because after the fact, I've always loved the Chromanocle.
I like that too.
It just makes more sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And even though Ethan has, you know, foregone his belief in the Chromanocle, I think that that is still on the board. But I also think that Donna is a mole.
Okay.
I'm also still there. And then there's someone else is a mole too. Oh, Tilly.
I don't think Tilly is. I think she's just wise. So I want to post a couple of comments about all this. You know, Arschreiser, Rennie, I don't think there's a mole. I think we're just seeing everybody paranoid. And I totally get that. And this place, this world is making it crazy. The Chromanocle also said the showrunners never talked about a mole. That doesn't mean anything just because of, you know. But and I understand what you're saying. You know, he's coming out of jail with a weapon. Well, I you know, he had a knife. Who knows where he got the knife?
It could have been packed in a suitcase.
It could be anywhere.
I don't travel hardly at all, but I doubt that buses are going through the same security measures that
they're not.
So he could have had it on his person. He could have had it in his suitcase. It might not even be his, you know, but at any rate.
I love then Boyd comes in. Or do you want to go before that? Do you want to do something before that? I'm sorry.
Well, the thing about it is that Donna finds out, not finds out. Donna tells Jim that they killed one. Like her and Jim know what she's talking about. Randall, despite even seeing them, still isn't buying into the whole thing.
Right.
So, you know, so she's like, they've killed one, you know? And so they're going back and forth, and then, you know, it's getting a little crazy, and Boyd comes up at the best possible moment. Wait,
and says, drop the fucking knife.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great line. It's such a great line.
But, so they start, you know, talking about how they need to get in the RV in the next 5 minutes because the sun is about to set in a major way. So that's when they end up, in the RV versus the van, because Randall throws the keys into the woods. And they could have watched and possibly gone to see where the keys landed, but they're short on time, and it's safer to just run into that RV. But, you know, I don't see that RV as being all that sturdy.
Well, I mean, they did that first episode. They did our second episode, you know, they stayed the night and whatever.
Right.
I do want to go back to one thing, if it's okay, about the poem. Arshmesha Rennie, who is all things literature, you know, Rennie, this is what she does for, I mean, this is what Rennie does for a living. So there's a poem called Dream Within a Dream by Edgar Allan Poe. It's reminiscent of a nursery rhyme, but it isn't verbiage. And, you know, I think that's important. You know, Rennie is always, when I have a problem with these type of things, Rennie always has the right answer. But that said, they start coming, right, Lizzie?
Yeah, they start coming, and within, you know, pretty quickly, because Donna's at one end of the RV, Jim's at the other end of the RV, and, you know, we've got the nurse,
we got everybody. Oh,
Happy Hat and wife, which is the couple that showed up at the sheriff's office.
I don't know the cowboy.
And Nana is there. The milkman. the groom, the cheerleader, the workman, the mechanic. And I'm like, where the hell is the bride in all of this? Like, we saw her last season. Why haven't we seen her this season? You
know, it's the same thing with Jasmine. They may not have been a bit available.
Yeah, but they didn't really show a close up of her, I don't think.
I don't know. I don't know.
So they probably could have done somebody, but I'm looking at my notes. I don't really like the way I
The one thing that needs to be pointed out is, you know, Donna's like, they don't just stop like that.
Well, they're advancing towards the RV and then they all just stop in sync with one another.
Right. It's like they were waiting for something.
Yeah, like they had a stop sign or a stoplight, you know? And so Boyd is talking about going out there and seeing if the bullets work.
Right. Elgin Silver bullets.
Yeah. And so then, you know, Randall's like, I'll go do it. And no, Donna suggests that Randall go do it, you know, kill two with one bullet, basically. Like we find out if it works and then, you know,
and we get rid of Randall.
Yeah. So when they stop moving, the music box starts playing and it's coming through
the broken radio.
That's broken. And they're all looking at it. They all can hear it. Now, this is the first time for Donna, Jim, and Randall. Boyd's the only one that knew that melody before.
Right.
So this is the melody that they're talking about. So what's going to happen when the music stops? So Randall grabs a monkey wrench, smashes the back window, and jumps out of the RV. And the thing about that is that he's left them vulnerable at this point.
Well,
is useless forever now.
In his defense, so he's new to this place. He's been there a couple of days. He's seen the monsters. Well, yep.
Because he's been sitting in a bus that's nothing but windows.
And all I'm saying is this. Well, yeah, Randall is a dumbass. But my point being is, then all of a sudden the game changes. Because in his defense, every time, they kill one, all right? And it's like, it is kind of convenient. For his point of view, you can make the
dots. Every time they kill one?
No, what I'm saying is all of a sudden they can't kill these things. And all of a sudden now they kill one.
Oh. And
in his eyes, it looks convenient. That's my point.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that he's not a dumbass. I think he's the dumbest person in the world. But I can totally see when the shit is in the fan. He's like, I'm out of here. That's what I meant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So then the music box is playing. Boyd is saying, we got to do something because every time the music stops, bad shit happens. Just like when Victor is saying, every time someone starts asking questions, bad things happen. So he's going to go out and let's see.
Then they hear
the banging underneath the RV, which it's like, what could that be? You know, like, is it a fake out, you know, or did one of them crawl in underneath? But I can't see them being that way since they're so not disciplined, but they're so intentional with the way they walk and they don't move very fast. And, you know, it's not like they're knocking politely to be let in, you know?
And again, this is a total reach, but remember, they do have caves. There is a cave system. We don't know how
They could have landed on top of a door.
And they knew that they were there for whatever reason, and they could just dig right out, whatever. Now this is interesting, but I didn't see this. Do you remember?
Because I have it in my notes.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So we've got a number from Lost, or basically in Lost fashion, we've got the number 47, which adds up to 11. And 11 is, I know it's important in numerology, like you want the number 11, but I don't remember what it is. So the music stops. Boyd's like freaking out because it has stopped. And then they hear the banging. Then Boyd decides to do something. The second he's like, I'm going to do something, the lights start to flicker.
Right.
And when the lights flicker, that's when Randall jumps out the back window and starts running. And
then they go after him.
Well, they start they start going after him. But then Boyd gets Donna and Jim out of the RV and they run for the van. And Boyd is shooting. And I have a problem with this because they've shot at them before. And we always see them go back, you know, like they absorb the hit, right? And this time, I'm like, Boyd is not that bad of a shot that he has missed all of them with every single shot at close range. So I don't really understand what that's all about. If they did get shot with the bullets and then they won't feel the results from it right away, or I don't know, but that kind of bothered me. So Jim and Donna get to the van. They're able to start it. Nana, Groom, the mechanic and milkman, they follow Randall. And then the other bunch, the cheerleader, the nurse, the workman, and let's see, who else? The nurse, Happy Hat and wife, they follow the van. So they're after the van. But, I mean, it's not like they can really keep up with that. But as Boyd is going out, Abby appears. And the lights are flickering. Did you notice that Abby flickers too?
Yeah.
I didn't see it the first time.
Yeah.
I didn't see it the second time. But when I was taking notes, I was like, oh, my God, she glitched.
One of the things that I found interesting was along with that, it is she says, come back to me. Now, that could be a couple of things. It could be he's asleep and he's trying and she's trying to, you know, he could be dead or he could be in the hospital
in a coma.
That's what I mean. In a coma. It could be a lot of things. It could be this whole world is trying to bring him back in there for a certain reason. You know, They're trying to trick him. You know, you can make a lot of cases with that. I'm going to pop this one up. Abby's telling Boyd to come back to her. Boyd's telling later to Christy to stay by
Marielle's side.
It triggers Boyd. Might be a coma. Yep, like I said, and Abby is next to him. Yep, exactly. That's exactly what I just said.
Wake up. Yeah.
I will say this before.
What did that mean?
No, like, I know. I don't know.
No.
My point being is that electricity does have a lot to do with this whole world.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what that means. Again, folks, we're on the podcast. We're lovers of this show, just like you are. And we're trying to piece this thing together. So
when she disappears, like there is one of those shrieking screams and then Abby's gone.
Right.
And even when this doesn't really mean anything, but when Randall jumped out of the back of the van behind him, you can see the light flickering, you know, but, so I don't know what this, cause we never see who's making that scream ever because The monsters don't make a scream. They don't make other than talking. They don't say anything.
Well, there's always screams outside.
Yeah. The screams are outside. It's almost like an alarm of some sort, like, wake up, get out there. It's time to go eat, you know, and or on your mark, get set, go, whatever you can get. Now you can go, you know, go hunting. Like, that's the starting gun sound, you know, or one scream, you know, like screams go off at predetermined intervals.
So my question for you, and as well as the viewers, do you think the cicadas are part of a bigger group?
A bigger picture?
A bigger group that the monsters are scared of. And the reason I say that, before you guys say anything, is Randall gets attacked by the cicadas, correct? Yes, he's the first one to get attacked by the cicadas. But there was no monsters around.
They were pursuing him.
But I think they, it looked they like.
Well, we didn't see them, right?
Yeah.
It's not like they were on top of him while that was happening, but he was running from the monsters. And then, you know, I don't know if he heard the cicadas coming and, you know, that noise was getting louder, because, I mean, we've all heard that sound. And at times it's much louder than other times, but it's always, you know, pretty audible, you know. But he trips and falls, lands on his back, and he's screaming because they're all darting down at him.
Again, I know in the chat, as well as you, you're saying that the monsters are going after him. I got to rewatch it again. But my point being is they attacked him. I think they're part of
the cicadas did attack him.
No, I know. But what I mean is whether the monsters were coming at him, I have to rewatch it again. And I already watched it a couple of times. It's just an interesting thing. That's all.
Well, you've got to remember that the monsters don't run.
They don't run.
Randall's running and the cicadas can fly. So it's not like, I'm not saying that the monsters are right on his tail. They're not.
Right.
You know, like if there were no cicadas and Randall fell, the monsters would have gained some ground on him. But, you know, the cicadas got him first. So
before we get to another thing, I just wanted to tell people once again, you can hit the subscribe button at any time and hit the bell. And the reason I say hit the bell is because we are going to Mrs. Lou and game night.
Oh, yeah.
Go right ahead.
Say, Victor must have gone down to the bar and grabbed Jade to bring him back up here, up to Mrs. Lou's, to make sure that he was going to be okay. For whatever reason, Victor is staying at Mrs. Lou's house with his friend Tabitha and his ex-friend Ethan. And Ethan is pretty sour. Like,
yeah,
he is really kind of sour.
Now, I'm sorry.
Doesn't the hero always lose his way and lose his faith at some point?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's all that is happening. So we've got Victor, Jade, Julie, Tabitha, Mrs. Lou, Tian Chen, and Ethan.
Now, a couple of things I do want to point out when you're done.
Yeah. So my first question is this the slumber party that we want to be at? This is the one where I want to be. So Jade and Tabitha are broken off and they're in the kitchen and they're looking at Eloise's pictures. And they zero in first on the Civil War pictures. And the thing that I wonder is that, especially with some of the things that she drew, and I'm drawing a blank at the moment, but there were some things that she drew that we saw last week that definitely hadn't, or we don't think had happened, because it was the bus. Remember, she drew the picture of the bus and she drew something else. But were the Civil War pictures something that she saw in the future that Jade sees? Or was it something that she saw, or was it something that came to her psychically? Because why would she draw that? And Tabitha says because the pictures come from the mother's stories. So I don't remember her telling stories or Victor saying that she told stories, but, you know, maybe that was dialogue that was cut. And then if so, like if the, you know, my question was, when was the little tidbit about mom telling stories? When was that revealed? And then Tabitha shows him the tower pic. And remember in the first season, Tabitha, she's digging and then all of a sudden she's climbing stairs.
Climbing stairs, yeah, with the dates, which they still have not gone back to.
They haven't gone back to it, but I mean, Victor's only been there for 40 years. I know in my first From book, I've got the dates written down. And it could be significant things that happened in those years. And maybe they're recorded when it happens and not necessarily a predictor. Because I don't remember seeing anything from the future, any dates from the future. It was all like years that were past. But she says, you know, she tells Jade that Victor's mom wanted to save the children that were in the tower.
Right.
And then she said, maybe I've been thinking about these kids that I see. Maybe I've been thinking about them all wrong. So if you go back and you think about what those kids look like, they're dirty. They've lost a lot of hair. The clothes are dated, or they appear to be dated. But, you know, Victor's mom was going there to save them, that they were locked in the tower, which makes me think that there's an evil witch somewhere, right? That would lock a bunch of kids in a tower. But she suggests that maybe if they save the kids, then they can go home.
Right.
This is their way to go home.
Now, there's some theories out there about the picture, because, and again, I'm drawing a blank on all the similarities, but when you look at the picture, there's like these green stones. Green. Yeah.
I thought they were like fir trees.
Yeah. There's like a, and again, I was going to pull it up, but I couldn't get it before the podcast aired. There's like, I believe 7 or 8 of them. And then it kind of equates to a lot of other things. You know, the number of kids that attacked her, or whatever you want to call Tabitha, you know, there might be a correlation with that. But we'll have to definitely take a look at that down the road. Just so you guys know, the pictures are not the mom's memories. It's Eloise's. It's Eloise's pictures. So that's what she's seeing. She, for whatever reason, she made a picture of those Civil War guys that Jade saw. You know, and Jade makes the point, why am I seeing a Civil War guy and this girl that's been dead? Is drawing them 40 years before this. So again, I don't know. I don't know.
So my questions following the whole tower thing, you know, with Tabitha saying maybe this is how we get to go home, it makes me wonder, is this why Victor is afraid of anyone asking questions? Because the last person, or the first person to ask questions, was his mom. And his mom is not around anymore. She never came back. So there's that. And then, could Martin have tried to do the same thing and then ended up locked in the tower? And that is where Boyd ended up. Maybe they were already in the tower.
Yeah. I do want to answer one question that the Chromanacle has said. He keeps saying that Jade said it's Victor's mom, which he's right. You're absolutely right. He did say Victor's mom. But you have to remember, those pictures were Eloise's pictures, in and And Victor,
what's his question?
No, it wasn't. He keeps questioning the fact that it's Victor's mom's pictures. It's not Victor's mom's pictures. It's Eloise's pictures. It was always Eloise's pictures.
I think they made a little error, possibly.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. But at any rate, it just started to make me think, because what if Victor's mom is one of the bodies chained to
and
the wall?
He also doesn't want to remember. He doesn't want to remember any of it because his sister and his mom left and they were part of the massacre. So he took those memories, and why does he?
Were they? I don't remember seeing a little girl, and we did. They didn't show his mom.
Well, all I know is this: he said
they weren't there the next day.
He said this. He said the reason you draw pictures is so you don't forget. You don't just draw pictures just to draw pictures. So those pictures were there so he doesn't forget. He put them in his car so he wanted to lock them up so he could forget. And
I don't know what car that was, but that
was his car. That was the car that they came in.
No, it wasn't. They came in a station wagon. That car had a trunk. He opened a trunk.
Whichever car, maybe it was Christopher's car. I don't know whose car it was then. But the it doesn't matter. The fact is, he locked it up.
You're saying it doesn't matter about a show.
Don't get me started about every bit counts. What I mean by that is this, Lizzie, and no, I'm pissed about this.
Why are you pissed? It's just
because
it's,
you guys are wrong. Meaning this.
You're wrong.
Meaning this. Okay. The fact is, he said Eloise made the pictures. He put it in the trunk to make sure he forgot. And that's the reason why he did it. He didn't want to remember. That's all.
Yeah, he hadn't looked at those pictures for 40 years.
He purposely didn't want to.
Right. But, all right, so my thing is
okay,
that...
Okay, it's Christopher's car, whatever.
My thing is that perhaps Boyd and Martin were in the tower. Maybe Martin had the same mission and actually made it to the tower. And he was still alive, which makes me wonder how long Martin had actually been there. So that's that. Tabitha talks about the tower being in her dream. Maybe she's supposed to rescue the kids. And then Mrs. Lou breaks that whole thing and says, it's game night, and brings a bunch of games. I didn't recognize any, but I could tell they were all old games. So it would have been interesting if they had like a really old game of Monopoly or something like that. So, then, you know, Ethan's at the window, which I was kind of surprised that he was standing there looking at the window, almost like he was challenging a monster to come to the house, you know, and glamour him or whatever, but he's all pissed off. And he's just saying that, we're all going to wake up dead. And the curious thing that Victor says is that it won't happen that way again. Like he already knows, because I mean, we know he's been getting some communication because of certain things. Cause he knew that the two cars were coming on the same day. So he says that, and then, you know, I think Julie that said something to him about the Chrominacle, and she's like, and he's like, screw the Chrominacle.
Man, he's kind of done. And then, yeah. You know, what I find interesting is that Victor does start to open up a little bit more. He's opened up a lot this season.
Yeah.
And he basically says to him, trying to comfort his friend, that, you know, you make your own, I forget exactly how he said it, but you make your own, you make your own ending. And then Ethan comes back and says, wrong one. What about your, you make your own story. And then, and then he's like, what about her story? Meaning his mom, did the ending, it's not the ending that she wanted. You know, so, and they all get mad at Ethan and what you got.
Yeah. So the one thing, like when Ethan storms off, what I really have noticed a difference, and it's striking, is that Julie turns to Victor and she's like, I'm so sorry. Like, she's treating him with such care and reverence now versus when she first met him and, you know, he's the creepy
with the
guy.
Peaches. Yeah, the peaches guy.
Yeah, exactly. And so then Tabitha and Jade are back in the kitchen and, you know, they were just, I hate saying this, but it was almost like some throwaway lines. It just put them back in the kitchen so that they weren't in the living room when Julie goes into being attacked by cicadas that are invisible, that only she can see. So
now at that point, then that's when the episode ends. But the fact is, she was the third person to be attacked by cicadas in this episode
that we saw. All right. So sheriff's office.
Yeah. Let's go to sheriff's office. So,
oh my God, I could not have put two people that should not have been alone together. I just felt so bad for Kenny the entire time. And then Sarah just would not shut up. And he's basically telling her to shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. And she would not shut up.
I understand. And I'm, you know, I give Sarah, first off, the two actors killed it.
Yeah.
They went head to head and it was an uncomfortable scene. I think that she was trying in her way to justify / apologize / trying to get her redemption tour on. But I think that she also dropped a couple of bombs that could be important to the bigger story.
You know,
she talks about Nathan and his fears coming true. And
with the cicadas.
And, I think it was the Chromonacle who also pointed out, when we come to the map, Norman's on the map. Now, for those of you who don't remember, Norman was in the beginning of episode one, was the monster that they were talking about.
So there's
a couple of things that go on there. But this is the thing, you know, Sarah does stand up for herself, but there's a theory out there. And I want to go back to the season finale of last season. Do you think the bottles in the woods are everybody's fears?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It's a
like,
good.
Weren't there years though? Like in like pieces of paper with the years written on them in the bottles.
But my point being is there could be a whole bunch of reasons for those bottles.
Yeah. But I mean, it could be like someone's fear from that year or something like that, like a theme.
Right.
But what she said, though, is that this place feels wrong, just like Forrest did. And I hated the whole thing for Kenny. I hated it. And I kind of couldn't believe he didn't just go in another room and stay in another room, even if it meant that he left the door open. But what I got from Sarah, the biggest part I got from Sarah was like, oh, my life sucks. I didn't get to be me. I didn't get this. I didn't get that. It was all like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, Sarah. But it was like, it wasn't just about, you know, just about being there. It seemed to be everything that she was bitching about.
But you know what, though? She's entitled to bitch and moan.
Not to Kenny.
I understand that. But at the same time, you know what? Yes, she is. Because you know what? Kenny's not the only person that's lost something. All right? I mean, I understand what she did was unforgivable.
She killed four people.
I understand that. it's also a weird world.
Yeah. You know,
people are jumping through trees. Monsters are coming out.
Right.
But my point being is everybody says they would do X, Y, and Z until they're in that particular situation. And I'm not defending her in the sense of what she did was absolutely wrong. I'm just saying she's trying to redeem herself. I'm not saying she's doing a very good job of it.
She's not doing a good job of it at all.
But and you know what, though?
Herself to the wrong
but
person.
Wait, hold on. Then she tries to play Russian roulette.
Oh, you're jumping at like. But it was. He's the one that suggested her killing herself.
Right.
You know, because she's talking, she apologizes, but she won't stop talking. She's up at the map saying, this one is you, this one is me. And, you know, she's saying, I'm a murderer and all this other crap. And she's saying, this place destroyed the only person I get to be. And it's over for me. And then Kenny's like, well, Boyd keeps an extra gun in that top right shelf there, top right drawer. And Kenny leaves for a while and he comes back and she's sitting there staring at the gun with the bullets on the desk. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, I'm like, if she was serious, wouldn't she just have gone ahead and done it? She wanted an audience. She waited until Kenny came back. It was like she wanted to terrorize him some more. It wasn't enough to just kill his father, but she wanted to terrorize him, to put him through that.
Okay.
And involve him. What?
Okay.
Okay. What? Like,
no, I'm not going to. Okay. I mean, I don't think she was trying to terrorize him. I just don't. So I
think what she did was.
No. Kenny can't have it both ways. Okay. So Kenny says, I want you to die. I'm going to throw you in the box. I'm doing all this. He tells her that there's a gun in the frigging thing. And then when it comes down to it, he doesn't have the balls to let her pull the trigger. So he can't have it both ways.
Because she tried twice and there was no.
So what? Let her die.
I know. But the thing was, like, the thing that bothers me is that she waits for him to come back into the room before she even tries to do anything. And she's like, how many bullets should I put in? Like, she's all drama.
I'm taking that scene differently, but okay.
Oh, okay.
That's why we podcast. That's why people have different opinions. Yeah, and that's why
I'm not saying either one of us is right. I'm not. So I just think that it was very manipulative of her. And I think that she's been manipulative all along. That we possibly could be seeing Sarah in the larger sense that we've never seen her. I mean,
she's the mole. Ha ha ha. I'm kidding. I'm not going down that road.
But the thing is, like, she's up in, or she's down in New Hope, Pennsylvania with some guy, and it didn't go well. And it's so bad that Nathan has to drive from Boston to Pittsburgh or wherever New Hope is to get her. And like, I'm hoping that it's at the top of Pennsylvania.
No, I can tell you exactly where it is. It's in the middle. It's on the border. It's on the border of New Jersey and in Pennsylvania.
So he's got to drive all the way through New Jersey to get there. Like, I don't know if you've ever driven that. I've driven it a couple of times.
I live in New Jersey.
I know you do, but do you live all the way down there?
I've been to New Hope. Yeah. It's not that.
I mean, so you know driving from the top of New Jersey to the bottom, it's a long ride.
It's a couple, it's like 3-ish hours, if not even, but.
I don't know. When you don't have like a state line to mark something, it just gets to be a long
to be a pain in the ass.
Yeah. I really just didn't like how she wanted to involve him in this.
And listen, if the listeners think I'm wrong, I'm not trying to cause controversy here. All I'm saying is the girl's been through a lot. She deserves to die. She wants to die. She said she wanted to die.
I don't think she does.
Wait, hold on. She said, there's no place for me here. I would rather go out in the wilderness because I think there's more that I can do. And she says, if I just don't want to be here anymore. So, you know what?
Walk out into the woods. No one's stopping
you. She tried to.
When?
She told Boyd, I want to go. Give me a talisman.
She could have just gone.
I guess she could have just gone, but
she could have just gone. Yeah, I don't know. Like,
I don't know. Okay.
I think she just wants to be able to blame somebody else all the time. That's what I think.
We didn't get there yet. We didn't get there, Chromanacle. Okay.
So now Colony.
All right. Colony house. Now we can get to what he was saying or she was saying. So now we're at the Colony house, and Reggie is being the biggest pain in the
God. Yes, he is totally.
No, like, you know what he needed? What? He needed some cheese for all the whining that he was doing.
Oh, my God. He was whining. It was terrible. He says something broke. Now I can't remember what that meant.
Well, he said about his wife, something broke inside of her.
Yeah. When?
When he was in Colony House, he was telling about his wife. And
he said, I know, but at what point did something break in her? I don't remember that.
When she went up to sleep or something, yeah. And then he starts in with the, we're all going to die.
We're all going to freaking die.
Yeah. And then he pushes Ellis.
Yeah.
And then everybody's like.
I mean, it was like he threw him across the room. Poor Ellis.
He just had friggin' major surgery and he's getting pushed around.
Yeah, by this guy. And then he tells everyone, Boyd.
You know what? I'm sorry. Wait. Chromanacle's like, of course you should act like that. I get that.
Who should act like what? That
Reggie
should act like that?
He was just annoying.
It's hard to have sympathy for someone acting like that.
No. The reason why we're not being more sympathetic is because the way he treated Sarah and his wife treated Sarah when she tried to get the stuff, like, oh, this is our place. You're the murderer. You've been here for 2 seconds. She's been here a lot longer. Like, give me a break.
Yeah.
I'm not defending Sarah. It's just, it just seemed very strange.
They have done nothing to want to make them the center of our universe. That's for sure. The two of them were not pleasant people. And it was amazing that they were able to find each other on this planet so that they could end up in that little place alone.
I understand what you're saying.
Me?
No, I'm looking at Chromanacle. You know, if you saw all those images, I get what you're saying. But at the same time, you're in a world that is like batshit crazy.
They've all seen a lot.
And I'm just telling you right now, he was a whiny little bitch. He was not helping the situation.
No, he was not helping.
That's the bottom line.
When he's ringing the bell, I'm like, stop it! I know no one's supposed to be asleep anyway, but come on.
Right. I understand he's going to be in shock, and you're right. He should be in shock. But at the same time, you know, I am cold. I'm not cold. I'm not being cold.
I'm frigid. I am, you know, like the Freezemeister, if that's the case. If you're cold, yeah. No.
It's sweet. And you know something? This is the bottom line, and Lisa sums it up. I might be wrong, and he might be in a state of shock, but that doesn't mean he needs to be that annoying.
No. I mean, you know what? They should have put him and Sarah in the sheriff's office together.
That would have been great. You're going to die. Good. I want to.
I'm going to watch you.
Oh, no, no, no. Wait, hold on. I understand where his pain is coming from, Krominacle. That's not, I understand that. He's just annoying. That's all I was saying. We're on the all same page.
You're like having this one-sided argument that no one else besides you knows what's going on.
Okay, so here.
Anyway.
I'm sorry. There. Now I'll pump it up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's annoying. I thought you could see that. That's why. I'm sorry.
No, no one can see that. You're just talking to yourself.
I am talking to myself.
Yeah. All right. So Christy gets Marielle into a detox room, which happens to be like the perfect room because it's got leg and arm restraints. And I just
Oh, wait, you're talking about the sex room?
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Wait, hold on. I think
it's interesting that... Yeah, there you go. I think it's interesting that they have a room like that up at Colony House, but they don't have anything like that down in the town.
Well, so
I think that that room gets used a lot.
It gets used when people come to the town and they go to Colony House.
But, you know, like how many of the bus people ended up in there, I wonder. But it was a good room for Marielle.
But really, was it?
Because she needed to be strapped down at one point. You know, she needed that so that she wasn't. Because, I mean, she was ripping the covers off the windows. So she could have just let someone in and have a repeat of the Night of Jasmine. So she needed to be under control in that way.
The one thing that, you know, I didn't understand, and this is something that just is driving me nuts, and Lisa points it out as well. Every time somebody left her alone, something happened. At what point do you say, I'm not going to leave you alone?
Yeah. Or someone should have been staying with her the whole time. There's plenty of people in that house that could have.
Hello?
Yeah. Very true. So then, you know, there's the conversation with Ellis and Christy about the baby and the baby possibly falling asleep and, you know, the whole thing. I don't know. I get it. And then I'm like, what are you going to do? You can't keep that baby awake. You know, it's just a little fetus guy in there. But then Christy tells him about being in med school. And how all of it is just a mystery. And there's this big ball of fire that's 93 million miles away that somehow keeps us warm. And when I was teaching astrobiology, we were always like one of the little the way I would describe it. And, you know, it was in the curriculum is that the planets, the inner planets, are like they're around a campfire.
Right.
The sun is the fire, and then you've got Venus, Mercury, Mars, or Mercury, Venus, Mars, and Earth, Mars. Yeah, I know the order of the planets, but they're just all in that almost like insulated space. And then we've got, you know, the asteroid belt, and then there's a huge distance before we get to the gas giants. But here we are, four little planets that are close to the sun. And we are just the right distance to, you know, be able to sustain life on our planet at this point. It wasn't always that way, but finally, for the last, you know, 4.6 billion years, or how many years have we had life on this planet?
You're the teacher. I don't know.
I think 3 million years, something like that. It took a million years for the planet to cool down enough for something to start happening. But anyways, it seems like that doesn't mean very much. But if you think about it, right, we've got the sun at a distance, making sure the trains run on time, right? And then we have what it's suggesting is that they are being controlled by something that is not right there. Something, some other entity that's keeping them alive. You know, it might be playing God with who gets killed and who doesn't get killed, but there's something else in control of things. So that's what that meant to me. And Christy's expert medical opinion was that pregnancy is weird.
You know something though? I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it basically is. You know, birth is a mystery. Life is a mystery. I think it's fitting that they put this episode and this scene in on the day that they did, because it's Father's Day. And you know, it's like when Fear did, you know, killed off the mother on Mother's Day. I mean, like, you know, at least it wasn't
a Madison they killed.
No, it was Grace the first time. It was Grace the first time she died, or the daughter died, or something. I don't know what the hell happened.
It was they killed. Oh no, the woman that gave birth to
right. They did on Mother's Day. No, but
yeah, they killed her
in a good way.
Like she's like trekking to make sure she gets someplace with the baby.
No, but to your point, you know. Being a father, it's being an expecting father. The greatest day of my life was the day I found out my wife was pregnant. The worst day was every single day until that baby came out, because we had some complications.
Yeah.
And we were very lucky. My daughter is healthy and happy, but she's got all her fingers, all her toes and everything else in between. But it's a very, you don't know what you don't know. And the other thing is, you know, I want to jump ahead to when Christy is having issue with her girlfriend and she's sick, when she does have the bugs. Cause I'm going to tell you right now, Lisa said, well, Christy's off. You're damn right. She's off, because her girlfriend just told her the reason why she relapsed was her.
Yeah.
Because she was lost. Now, she also is a medical professional trying to deal with a detox girlfriend. And I'm going to tell you right now, the worst thing, when my kid or my wife gets sick, I'm an idiot. When somebody else gets sick and I'm as an EMT, I can help you as much as I know. But when it comes to my kid and my wife, I can totally relate with what happened to her. And boy, it is like you're a third year medical student. You're a doctor. Treat her like a patient. And that's hard to do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hard to do. But in terms of the baby, it was actually, I saw that whole entire scene. I was laughing because he was a typical father to be.
Yeah.
And he just, you don't know what you don't know. And if Christy said, you need to dance around with your hand doing this all day, slapping your head, you know what he'd be doing? He'd be doing that. And that's the wonderful thing about parenthood or future parenthood at that point. And it was only a couple of weeks, maybe 6 weeks, if that. You know, so there's not a lot. I mean, there's definitely a baby there, but it's like a, I forget what it is, a lima bean or whatever.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's early. Very early.
And the fact that she equated it to the ball of magic fire was great. You know, but I understand what you're saying about maybe the baby possibly becoming a monster. If it's sleeping, something may happen, come through the belly, all this other kind of stuff.
Or it could just die.
It could just die. A miscarriage.
I mean, it could die anyway, you know? So anyway.
So
Marielle has, you know, multiple meltdowns. Boyd has to come up and remind Christy like what she needs as a doctor and not a girlfriend right now. And, you know, part of it is she just has to not take it in stride, but just she needs to remove herself emotionally from the situation, because, you know, she can't do the best by Marielle otherwise. And, you know, Marielle is oscillating between being very, you know, docile and then being out of control until they finally strap her down and, you know, she's not wandering all over the place. I mean, her being able to wander all over that room, like I said, just puts everyone at risk. So then we see Elgin teaching Tilly how to crochet.
I know, it's so cute.
Yeah. And so I'm kind of surprised. Well, yeah, I don't want to stereotype her, but I don't know. I don't know. I can crochet, but only because my mom did, you know, and I learned a little bit then. But Fatima comes over and Tilly, you know, says something about her being pregnant. And then she's like, oh, you can always tell. I'm like, no, you can't. You can't just tell someone's like 6-7 weeks pregnant. I mean, maybe once in a while, you know, but like Tilly's like, you know, as if she predicts it all the time.
Hey, like, you know, yeah.
You're not showing, you know what I mean? So, and she's like, I know an expecting mother when I see one.
I'm and she's like, got four kids and 7 grandkids. Now, I wanna go into this because people in the chat are talking about this whole thing. And there's a couple of points I want to point out here. First off, you know, the radio is 47 on the radio. Tilly has 4 kids and 7 grandkids. And Lisa yep. said 4 minus 3 is.
Who's Lisa?
Lisa's another person that's in the chat.
Oh.
That's why. I know you can't see the chat. I'm sorry. That's why.
Well, and as Lisa said, I'm like, what character is named Lisa?
Oh, you don't know? She's the other character.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. All right. So you end up with 3. 4 minus 3 is not equal to 3.
I know.
4 plus 3 is equal to 7. 7 minus 4 is equal to 3.
Right. So anyway,
told her my thoughts.
Well, the bottom line is, and I think that this is what it's, you're right. It's 7 minus 4 equals 3. Okay. You know,
dude,
what?
I'm one to talk. I make screw ups like that all the time.
You know what, guys, yeah, you're talking,
I knew what you were doing.
You're talking to the king of dyslexia here. That's why I don't read the feedback. And I admit that.
Oh, my God. That's why you're so mad all the time.
I am mad all the time. I'm just a mad guy.
No, like when I'm just like, oh, you gotta fix this.
I go, yeah, we're always. And if you've seen
me. I wish I knew, Alex. I mean, of course I have patience with you. Like I try to be a good teacher and have patience, but.
No, but the bottom line is.
Explains what the issue is. Okay.
But the bottom line is there's a connection possibly. And I'm not saying it is the connection, but the number 47 has come up a lot of times. And I don't know how old Tilly is. And if, and folks.
She is not 47.
Or 74. She could be
74.
My point being is. And Lisa, we still love you. I'm the last person to be talking about bad math, so don't worry.
Just used to reading kids' math work.
But the bottom line is there's some kind of connection. But what I love about this whole entire scene is the scene right after it is Elgin finally gets to talk to somebody, and I still don't understand why why Fatima's pregnancy was the reason why he remembered this.
I don't think that we got the whole story.
We've never gotten the whole story.
No, as far as his dream, because when he finds out that Fatima is pregnant because Tilly was blah, 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 blabbing, right? Then all of a sudden, we've got Elgin, we've got Fatima, we've got Boyd, and we've got Ellis. And Elgin, because Elgin was like, oh my God, this was my dream. Now I remember my dream. And he says quite clearly.
The boy in white.
His dream on the bus.
Right.
He was dreaming on the bus. And that's what he couldn't remember.
Wait, before you get to that. Before you get to that. I just want to point out I was wrong about the bus. I thought it wasn't a dream, and it evidently was a dream. So I need to come clean, because that's why she was yelling at me about
it. I wasn't yelling at you. I don't even remember who I was arguing with.
It was me, because you're always arguing with me.
Okay. I mean, actually, I interviewed Nathan Simmons myself.
Yes, you did.
I asked him, and he wasn't 100%. And he's like, but I think it was on the bus. And now we know it was definitely on the bus.
We got to get him back. We got to get him back, because he loves talking from.
Oh, my God. I love him. He's such a sweetheart. Well, anyways, so he spills the beans that Fatima is pregnant, and then he talks about the dream. And he was like, it was a little boy dressed in white and repeated the same phrase over and over. Here they come. They come for three, unless you stop the melody. And then Batka says it's an old nursery rhyme that her grandmother used to sing to her.
Yeah.
I don't know. So. And during all of that, you know, Boyd finds out that Fatima is pregnant.
And he's going to be a grandfather.
I love the look on his face.
And he keeps looking back like.
Yeah, he's like, but, you know, Ellis was trying to tell him. And then Donna showed up. So that was the whole issue. Remember, I think it was last episode. He's up there talking to Ellis, and Ellis is like, I feel good. You know, back to my old fighting shape. And then Donna's like, boy, you know, and so just as he was going to tell him something. But, you know, Jim tries to get out of there, because it's like Donna, Boyd, and Jim make it back to the house, thankfully. Jim tries to get out of there. I got to go to my family. And
yeah, Jim was a little annoying this week.
No, he wasn't. Just at that moment.
I'm just saying that moment. I was like, enough already.
Yeah.
And he's like trying to apologize. This wasn't the plan. I'm like, all right, Jim. I mean, you know how much I love Ian. It's just that it was just this episode was just like, dude, enough.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the whole three thing. And I think that's like the last thing that I just want to discuss. I don't know if you have anything else, but I do want to talk about what this three thing means.
Okay, go right ahead.
So my thing is that, all right, it didn't necessarily have to be three of the same things, right? They come for three. And it's not saying that three identical things. But then we start having categories put together, right? So definitely dead is Paula. Definitely dead. She's dead.
Dead. She ain't coming back.
What we don't know is Randall. Randall appeared to be going the same route as Paula, because Paula, it was obvious something had gotten to her. And Reggie said he saw the cicadas. Okay. Which they must have gone down in through her mouth when she was screaming, and then burrowed their way out and just made a mess of her.
That's just gross.
It is gross. But at any rate, so the cicadas did that to her. And then there we see Randall. It was like, oh, well, this is how it all happens, right? Because he's falling, he's on his back, and he's screaming, and his mouth is open, and the cicadas are going into his mouth. They're just crawling right in. They're not like trying to like, you know, dig his stomach out or anything like that from the outside. They're just going in on the inside of his body, right? So then that's one, maybe two. Okay. Then we see Marielle, who we think is hallucinating. She sees them come in and they come flying at her. But when Christy sees her, there's nothing there. She's fighting an invisible foe. When we saw Randall, we definitely saw the cicadas. Reggie saw the cicadas. Okay, so visual evidence, right? And then Julie Same thing happens to her that happened to Marielle. She's fighting something that's not there while the whole family is watching her in distress. Not the whole family, but everyone at the house is watching her in utter distress. So we have two that are definitely the same. Two that are the same. We have one definitely dead from the cicadas. And then we have one, we don't know if he's dead. But together, that's four. Unless, well, we don't have an unless, because four minus three is one. I don't know.
That's why I say I don't know about the first one.
We'll know. Yeah, I don't think we'll know until next week.
Well, and I don't know either, but I just know that it's going to be an exciting season finale, and yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I guess those were your final thoughts, or do you have any other final thoughts?
That's all I really had to say about that. I mean, I don't.
Okay, Forrest.
Yeah, I don't know. Forrest for the trees. I don't know. I don't know what it really means, what that three means, because it doesn't talk about like triplets. If they were talking about triplets, we'd think that they were all the same, but they're not saying anything like that. They're just saying three.
All right. I want to switch gears for a second, because we are going to be doing a contest, and I am so, so, so excited. This is going to be our second season contest. And last year, if you go onto our YouTube channel, our border is all of the, and we're going to post this in the show notes, folks, and in the YouTube show notes. But the bottom line is this: we got a couple of pretty good prizes. And I know we've secured one of them. We're going to try to secure the other one,
which I don't know. All right. So let me just read the rules.
You read the rules.
And these will be posted in the show notes. You'll post this also.
Absolutely.
On Instagram. Okay.
I'll post them everywhere.
I will post it on TikTok. Okay. So Alex and Lizzie, that's us. Of the What Is From cast are running our second contest to celebrate the second season of the MGM show From. We're looking for talented crayon artists. Don't read too deeply into that word talented. Read and follow the rules below to qualify with a valid entry to possibly win something like the following: a crayon picture by Scott McCord, a lunchbox, or stuff we haven't found yet.
Right. It's stuff we haven't found yet. Yeah, by the way, I've got a deck of cards here. I've got
oh my God. I have cough drop wrappers. So
wait. I have some really cool stuff here. Yeah. There's this artist, Karen Hamilton. Helen. She's up in Boston. She does a lot of mashups with strong women. So we've got Dolly Parton pins. We've got all sorts of different things. So we're going to throw all these things in here. Who knows?
We're not.
We're just going to try to keep it to From stuff. But the bottom line is
Well, let me finish with the rules.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So the From Crayon Picture Contest rules, and we will be sticking to this. You want to draw a scene from the show, but it cannot be a replica of one of the pictures already on the show. It must be your original work. It must include at least, and I added this today, three identifiable show things, such as a building, a character, object, whatever, something that we can relate to the show. And I put that in there because of that one beautiful, like unbelievably gorgeous drawing that we got that had nothing to do with the show. All right. So it must be done only in Crayola crayon. Yeah, I'm not going to know otherwise. Like, I would say if you want to use rose art, go ahead, but you are not getting a quality crayon. It's got to be Crayola crayon. It must be done on an 8.5 by 11 inch piece of paper. Again, not going to know, but we're not looking for a poster. We're not looking for poster size. Okay. You can only submit one entry. Now your inspiration is childlike, right? We are not looking for the end all be all best artist in the world. You do not have to be good at drawing. You don't have to be good at coloring. You don't have to be. Just draw a picture. I mean, we got some really great ones. The best looking picture, as far as like the best drawn picture, isn't necessarily going to win. I can't remember who won last time, but I don't think it was the best drawn one. Was it?
No. Well, we definitely had some.
We had some good ones. Yeah. I love
it. And we actually have a panel of people look at this. So it's not just us. We get some people that we can't name.
That will judge.
Yeah, that judge.
They will be judgy-wudgy. All right. So inspiration. Watch the show. Like, draw. Express yourself. Express your favorite scene. You know, like, do something. You don't have to be great. Like I said, you don't have to be great at drawing or coloring. And I cannot stress that enough. Okay. So to submit your entry, take a photo of your drawing and send it to our email, which is fromepicspodcast@gmail.com. We had no idea Epics would become MGM, but we've already got an established email. So now it's collectible. Include your full name and email address in the body of the email. If you win and we can't get in touch with you, you don't win. We will admire your drawing, but you will not win. Include a brief description of the picture, the episode, the scene, the characters. Okay. So tell us where this is from. And again, it's your rendition, your inspiration. Submit no later than 11:59 Eastern Standard Time. Alex and I are on the East Coast of the United States, June 24th. 2023. So this is next Saturday. Got to have it a week. Next Saturday. You got a week. To win, you will be judged by a jury of our, Alex and mine, peers. We don't know who the peers will be.
All right. Now, folks, we'd love to just hear what you got, and that would be great.
Alex, remember last time when we did this, we had no idea who was actually going to judge.
Yeah. We do have judges.
We have judges. Like, we had no connection. When we did this last time, we hadn't even done any interviews. We were just like out there in the void, flapping in the wind. It was just me and you.
And the judges that judged last year, you know who you are. We're going to hopefully get you to help us.
We hope you come back. Yeah.
But that said, I think we have time for some feedback.
Oh my God. Now I have to go find the feedback. Sorry.
I can read some of it. I'll try to read. Well,
I just have to pull it up on my phone. I think I did have it up. So the first one is from Alma, and it's like, oh my God, what an intense and scary episode. I was on the edge the entire time wondering who was going to die at any given moment. I was very annoyed with Randall. Oh my God, Alma, get in line. I've gone from being annoyed to just not liking him. Although when we interviewed the actor,
he was sweet.
Simmons, I loved him. So great job. I kept saying, can one of these monsters eat this fool already? Maybe it's because they know he won't taste good.
He's bitter.
He's bitter and rotten. I was bummed the cicadas did him in. LOL. And have I mentioned how much I hate bugs? Oh my God, I hate bugs too. I hate them. Eek! Between the buzzing and the sudden appearance of the cicadas, I'm just horrified. I realize that a lot of folks are really digging the idea of a mole being among them, but I am not convinced. I'm convinced. It really is hard to make any predictions or to have theories with this show. You know what? It doesn't stop people from having them. Oh my gosh, they're abundant. I am completely dumbfounded. We are at the end of season two with no added info than what we have gotten in season one, except now we got more people and more questions. Man, this is a great show. I mean, it's so weird with these puzzle shows. Sometimes I feel like we have an answer to something, but I never keep track of my questions and answers.
I know it's hard. We actually have to put that board together that we keep putting stuff onto.
I wish we were in the same place. Like I have this big wall, and cause I podcast from my bedroom, and I have a big wall that if I just move the furniture, there's really nothing on that wall. That wall, the entire wall could be that whole thing.
And right.
And like I could have this on a swivel and be like, let me go over to the board. Anyway, Karen Medeiros, Alma Contreras, I am so disappointed that the cicadas got Randall. And I'm not convinced about the mole theory either. However, now that Randall died, but we don't know that he's died, and he was afraid there was a mole, is that going to be a new scary thing? And I do have a theory, by the way. Per Sarah's theory of the fears of the dead becoming reality like the cicadas.
There's one thing you missed on that. After she said, I'm disappointed that the cicadas got Randall, she went, ha, 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 with laughing emojis.
Oh, yeah.
She's not that disappointed.
Yeah. All right. So Lisa Spur. Alma Contreras. I'm not convinced Randall is dead, at least not from the cicadas. The other two people who were attacked by the cicadas were apparently hallucinating them. And even though they were being suffocated, it didn't seem like it killed them. And it was completely different from the death at the beginning with the broken woman. So the broken woman?
Yeah, in the beginning.
Oh, yeah. All right. So that's right, because Boyd says to Christy, look, she's still breathing.
Right.
You know? All right. And then
I'm going to do the last one because it's my other person that I cheat on you with, Yellow Jackets after show, Sydney. So Sydney says, holy blank, the RV scene was terrifying. No way that Abby was a reflection of good Abby, right? It was just evil lurking for Boyd. I'm disappointed that we didn't get more clues out of Elgin's dream from the bus driver and the nursery rhyme. We need the next line of the poem. You're right.
Is there a next line?
We don't know yet. It didn't look like to me that the bile bullets were killing the monsters. I'm going to explain that. And I forgot to explain this when we were in that. Do you guys think that the boss monster's trying to come through the floor? Yeah.
Boss monster.
Whoever the boss is, he's coming. The boss is coming. Tabitha, of course these children want you to help them. You don't scream at children to not touch you. Not even if you're...
Even if they're balding ghost children.
Sorry. And that's from Sydney. The reason why the whole bullet thing didn't work was the bile was on the outside of the shell. And I'm sorry, Lisa. We did your name wrong.
We did?
Oh, I'm sorry. And I know you don't talk like that. No, Lisa in the chat here, it's Spear. It's Spear. Did I get it right? I hope.
Is it Is it spelled? It's spelled spur, right? But is it pronounced spear?
S-P-E-A-R.
Did you spell her name?
Yeah, I spelled her last name. If I messed it up, I'm sorry. That being said, the whole bullet thing, he needed to put the bile in the bullet because the heat from the gunshot would have probably evaporated anything that was on it because it's so much heat. And
yeah. It didn't look like there was much going on there anyway.
No, not at all. Not at all. But you know, that's what's going on. And Lisa, thank you that it's okay. Hopefully you can still talk to us after all this. Ha ha ha. No, but that said, I don't think we have anything else except for if you want to, we've got new stuff. We've got some merch. We've got t-shirts. We've got mugs. We just sold 2 mugs today. We got Frumily shirts, all sorts of good stuff. So
I have one more thought, though, and that I meant to put in my note.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. So with the cicadas, like, I think we've wondered from time to time, like, where these monsters came from.
Right.
And they all seem to be from a very particular era. So what I'm thinking is that maybe, you know how cicadas come once every so many years? So maybe they come and they do this, they kill people, and then those people possibly become the monster.
What I think is, since they're from the 1950s, mm-hmm. You know what they're saying? Get off my lawn.
Maybe. Oh my God.
No, it's 25, I thought. It's not, is it 17 or 25?
I've heard 17. 17 sounds right.
Okay. Well, anyway.
But it seems like they're always here.
Exactly. Folks, like I said, we have a whole bunch of merch. If you want to go to the What Is From shop, it'll be in the show notes. If you also want to support the podcast, you can do it right on Buzzsprout. And next week, we are going to be talking the season finale, season 2, episode 10, Once Upon a Time. What are your thoughts?
I don't want it to end.
Well,
that's the one thought I have. I don't want it to end.
Yeah. I mean,
I want the writer's strike to end so that they can go into production for season 3.
Yeah, I'm really kind of disappointed about it too, but I'm not going to lie. It'll be great to have like a Sunday to myself. Folks, there might be a chance that this might be recorded before 10 o'clock. We are not going to go. There might be a chance we're not going live next week. Just because schedules and everything else. And if we do go live, we'll definitely tell you. If you want to get your feedback in, I promise I will do a feedback post. I'm very lame about that. If you do have feedback, you can always send us a message on our Instagram, on our Twitter, or on our TikTok. And we would love to have your feedback, whether it's voicemail or whatever. They have not confirmed season 3, but that doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. They haven't publicly said that there's a season 3. I mean, we have some birdies that say there might be a season 3, and we can't see that there isn't, right, Lizzie?
There was an article about it. Will there be a season 3 from June 17th? I forget what today's date is. Is today the 17th?
18th.
18th. Let's see what it says. At the time of this writing, the MGM series from has not yet been renewed for season 3.
I think it's a writer's strike issue right now. I don't think they're renewing anything.
They wouldn't hold it up.
Okay.
that would hold up.
Again, just so you guys know, we got a couple of special interviews coming up, and they will not be released until after the season is over. We have an exclusive with Young Victor, and we also have another one with Big Victor, Scott McCord, and we have another one with our favorite Colony House mother, Donna, Liz Saunders, which I am not doing so that Lizzie can braid hair with Liz and talk about movie stars and eat pizza. So I get the pleasure of working with Scott, and she gets the pleasure of working with Donna/Liz. And we're really looking forward to those. And if you guys have any questions or anything, just give us a holler. So that's our show. I know, are you doing Dead City?
I don't want to.
I said, are you doing it?
I don't know. I don't
okay.
want to.
Okay. So
after watching it today, I
love Dead City. And if you folks are into The Walking Dead, you know, there Ben and a cast of characters are going to be doing that. I know
you can always take my place if you want to.
Well, we'll see. I just signed on to with Sydney and Kirk Manley. We're going to be doing Loki in the fall, and I'm really excited about that. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff coming down the pike. There's a lot of good TV coming up. Even though the writer's strike is happening, there's still some good TV that's coming out because it's already in the can. So. That's it. That's our show. And you got anything else, kiddo?
Nope.
All that's right. It. If that's it, guys, it's been a pleasure, and we'll see you next week.
Get you home. Let's go. Come on, get in your house. Let's go. Come on.